Well, good evening. Good to see each of you back this evening. Glad that you're here. It is a dark and stormy night, isn't it? That'd be a good beginning for a mystery novel. Isn't that the typical thing? It was a dark and stormy night. It seems to have calmed down. Let's hope that it stays that way. We can do without those little swirly clouds that cause all the destruction. But tonight we're going to take a look at a character. I love doing character studies because the characters of Scripture are not make-believe. They are real people that lived at real times, even though it was a long time ago. They actually did live, and God dealt with them, and sometimes they did well and sometimes not so well. You know, it's been said, and I think it's true, that a good reputation takes a lifetime to build, and it takes about 5 minutes to destroy it. Isn't that the case? Oftentimes, the thing that a person is noted for may be the worst thing that they've ever done. I think of President Nixon, and what's the first thing that pops into your mind? Watergate. Yeah, that's not fair. He did some good things too, but Watergate is the one that sticks out in most people's minds. When we think of the late Senator Edward Kennedy, what's the first thing that pops to mind? Chappaquiddick. That's not fair. That was a bad thing, but he did good things too. Or President Clinton, Lewinsky. That's not fair. He did good things as well. And so the fact remains, you know, that it's oftentimes those negative things that stand out when we think about a person, an individual. Tonight we're going to look at Miriam, the older sister of Moses. And oftentimes we find that the very worst thing that she did, which was to rebel against God and to rebel against Moses, that's what she's remembered for. From Numbers chapter 12, verses 1 through 8. But she did some good things too. And God used her to do some good things. And so we want to take a fair and balanced look at Miriam this evening. And the first place that we're actually going to see her is in the book of Exodus. And it's in the second chapter, from the 4th through the 8th verses. And there is where we see that Moses had been born, that wicked Pharaoh had decreed that all the male babies of the Hebrews were to be killed. He was afraid there was going to be an overpopulation, that the Hebrew slaves would outnumber the people, the other people of Egypt that he was ruling over. And so he came up with this horrible scheme that all the males of the Hebrews, when they were born, they were to die. Cast them into the river. Let the crocodiles have them. Let them drown, whatever. The females, they would save alive, perhaps thinking that they would be more easily controlled or whatever the case. But anyway, we know that Moses' parents did not obey that command of the Pharaoh. And they kept Moses alive. And then when he got to a certain age, they couldn't keep him quiet anymore. And so what happens? Mother sets him adrift in a basket in the river. And who does she station there to watch and see what happens when Pharaoh's daughter comes to do her ritual bathing and offer whatever devotion she did to the Nile River? The Nile River was considered a god, small g. And so every day you would come down to the river and acknowledge this river as the source of your blessings, you know, brought the annual flooding and the silt and the water and the good things that made Egypt the breadbasket of that part of the world. So Pharaoh's daughter is going to be coming down there, and Mama stations Miriam there to make sure that everything is all right as far as Moses is concerned. And when Pharaoh's daughter comes down. Of course, we know the story that she sees the baby and her heart is touched, and she's wanting to take care of him. And there's Miriam saying, "Do you want me to get one of the Hebrews to nurse this baby for you?" This wasn't Pharaoh's daughter's child by birth, so she would not be able to nurse the baby. I can't help but think that Pharaoh's daughter knew exactly what Miriam was doing, and probably had a smile on her face that here's this brave little girl who is going to go and get Moses' own mother, of course, and she is going to nurse the baby, and she's even going to get paid for it. That's a pretty neat thing. But that means that Miriam was indeed a courageous little girl. She is not only not an Egyptian, she is not only not royalty, she is a slave. And for her to approach the daughter of the Pharaoh and speak to her took a great deal of courage when you stop and think about it. That would be highly unusual. You didn't just address royalty, especially if you're a slave. You do what you're told, you keep your head down, you do your job, and other than that, there's not much to say. But Miriam was a brave little girl. What if she hadn't done what she did? What if she hadn't kept track of Moses? What if something terrible had happened to him? Why, there would have been no Moses, there would have been no law of Moses, there would have been no one to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. Of course, we know that God in his providence will work things out. But nonetheless, credit Miriam for being a very brave little girl and a shrewd little girl. That she would get her own mother, of course, Moses' mother as well, to take care of him, and that would mean that they would be able to teach him for as long as he remained in that household before he went to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Miriam had been trained by the same godly parents who refused to surrender to the king's command to kill their little baby. She had been trained by those same parents that would train Moses for as long as he was in the house. So what's the application here? I would say not only to the little girls like Miriam, but to those of a greater age, but still what we would call young folks. God can use you to do tremendous things. Don't think for a minute that God can't use you to do his will, to accomplish great things, because he can. And I think those of us who are parents and grandparents need to be telling our children and our grandchildren, God can use you. You don't have to wait till you're old and then start serving God. In fact, what does the wise man say? Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. That's the time to begin. A lifetime of service to God. Be responsible, be brave, be shrewd, and serve the Lord. If you have godly parents teaching you the right way, rejoice in that. Don't resent it, but rejoice in it and be glad. So Miriam was used then as a young child. She was also used by the Lord in Exodus chapter 15, in verses 20 and 21, that we see that when the Israelites were coming out of slavery and they had crossed through the Red Sea, she leads the women in music and dancing. They were celebrating the overthrow of the Egyptians in the Red Sea. Let's just take a time out here and make it clear that when we talk about the music and dancing in which Miriam led the women, this is not what you would see at the high school prom. This is not the suggestive, vulgar kind of dance that we would see there. This was a a religious type of dance that was common in the Old Testament days and is still common today in some cultures, where we see dancing that's more like just kind of hopping back and forth on one foot and then the other. It doesn't involve the suggestiveness and the vulgarity and the lewdness that is oftentimes associated with the word dance today. So, be that as it may, this was happening before the law of Moses was given. That would be given, of course, when they reached Mount Sinai. But under the law, when it was given, there were prophetesses then too. Miriam was a prophetess, and there were others who were prophetesses. We think of Deborah in Judges chapter 4, Huldah in 2 Kings 22, and 2 Chronicles 34 during the reign of Josiah. Noadiah the prophetess, Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 14, and in the New Testament, Anna the prophetess at the temple in Luke chapter 2, verse 36. And even the early church had female prophetesses. Philip had four virgin daughters who prophesied, Acts chapter 21 and verse 9. So that brings up the question, is it right for a woman to teach the word of God? And the answer is a resounding yes. It always has been and still is. Titus chapter 2, verses 3 through 5, women are to teach, and especially the older women to teach the younger women. Notice that in all of these cases, these good, godly ladies were very careful to stay within the authority that God gave to them. Miriam led the women, and they formed kind of what we would call a responsive chorus to Moses, leading the song of Moses in the previous verses. And under both the law and the gospel, we find that God has restricted the teaching office of women. We find that in 1 Corinthians 14, verse 34. And for those who would say, well, that's just a cultural thing, that doesn't apply now because we live in a different time, and we have women CEOs and this women who are the prime minister of country X or whatever, and so that doesn't apply today. Well, hold the phone just a minute. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 11 through 14, Paul takes this all the way back to the creation, and there's nothing cultural about the creation. That's just a fact. That Adam was formed first, then Eve. And so this is a design that the Lord has put in place from the very beginning. So yes, there were women prophetesses. That doesn't mean that they took it upon themselves to teach the men of the congregation or whatever that might be. That just doesn't hold up at all. We have people today that are insisting that our ladies ought to be preachers and elders and what have you. They're simply mistaken about that. And we need to understand that Paul put that by inspiration back to the time of creation. It is not a cultural thing. It is the will of God from the very beginning. But our point is that God can and does use women in his work, and not just young women, but even the older ladies as well, our senior sisters, if you will. The current popular trend toward ignoring the God-given boundaries of and various roles of men and women must be vigorously resisted. We want to stay within the boundaries that God has given. And we see an example of that as we go to Numbers chapter 12, because there is where we read about Miriam, bless her heart, getting into trouble. And so let's read a few verses. In fact, we're going to read most of chapter 12 and see what happens here. It says, then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. So they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than all the men who were on the face of the earth. And suddenly the Lord said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, come out, you three, to the tabernacle of meeting. How would you like to hear those words? That would strike the fear into you, would it not? If God says, you three, come here. I can remember my mother saying, come here. And when she did, I knew that I was in trouble. And I suspect two of these three knew that they were in trouble. Then the Lord came down in the pillar of cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam. See, all three have been called, and now these two are specifically called to come closer into God's presence. And he said, hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly, and not in dark sayings. And he sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? So the anger of the Lord was aroused against them, and he departed. And when the cloud departed from above the tabernacle, suddenly Miriam became leprous, as white as snow. Then Aaron turned toward Miriam, and there she was, a leper. So Aaron said to Moses, Oh, my Lord, please do not lay this sin on us in which we have done foolishly and in which we have sinned. Please do not let her be as one of the dead whose flesh is half consumed when he comes out of his mother's womb. So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, Please heal her, O God, I pray. Then the Lord said to Moses, If her father had but spit in her face, would not she be shamed 7 days? Let her be shut out of the camp 7 days, and afterwards she may be received again. So Miriam was shut out of the camp 7 days, and the people did not journey till Miriam was brought in again. So both Miriam and Aaron used Moses' marriage to an Ethiopian woman as basically a pretext for finding fault with him. Their real problem is found in the second verse. They envied his authority. Has God only spoken through Moses? Hasn't he spoken through us too? We're just as good as Moses. We need to be on an equal plane with him, is their idea. You know, it's tragic that they weren't content with the roles that God assigned to them. God had assigned to them some important work to be done. But they weren't content with that. They wanted to be on the same plane, if you will, as Moses himself. Reminds us of something that happened later in the book of Numbers in chapter 16. There were some Levites named Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And they also envied Moses, and it did not turn out well for them, if you'll remember. There was a tragedy, a disaster that occurred, and they died as a result of this. Miriam was leprous for a week, but she didn't die. But Miriam's rebellion against God, against God's way, was the cause of this problem. And let's look at the results of what she did. Number one, it produced uncleanness. She was a leper for a week. And leprosy caused you to be unclean. You could not be within the camp of Israel. It was a contagious disease. And so the contagion would be contained by excluding the one who had leprosy from the general population. Well, we are not struck with leprosy today, but sin still makes us unclean before God. And so we need to be aware of that. Miriam's uncleanness was a physical uncleanness, as well as the fact that she had sinned against God. It also interrupted fellowship. So for 7 days, she's shut out of the camp of Israel. Departure from God's way still interrupts fellowship. It interrupts fellowship with God. It interrupts our fellowship with one another. If I'm caught up in a sin, it will affect my fellowship with you. And it certainly affects my fellowship with God. So that's two things, the uncleanness and the interruption in fellowship. And third, when you look at verse 15, it hindered progress. We're supposed to be headed to Mount Sinai and then on to the Promised Land. But we can't go anywhere for 7 days until Miriam is brought back into the camp after she's not a leper anymore. Same thing happens today with sin on the part of you and me. We can bring the progress of the Lord's church to a halt. There's a right way and a wrong way to deal with problems. These two characters had a problem with Moses being married to an Ethiopian woman. There's still that kind of prejudice today. Whether someone has dark skin or light skin doesn't make any difference to God. God created us all in his image. We should not have any issue with this. But Moses had married a Cushite or an Ethiopian woman, and brother and sister don't like it. And so they use that as a pretext to criticize with him. We certainly need to deal with problems in a godly way. The right way to deal with problems. We need to avoid bitter personal attacks. We need to avoid harsh judgments, and especially prejudices. And this, particularly when they're directed toward leadership, as they were in this particular case. So, in Numbers chapter 20 and verse 1, as the inspired record follows the wandering of Israel, we see the death and burial of Miriam at Kadesh is mentioned. No great fanfare given, such as at the death of other Old Testament characters. No doubt Moses and Aaron mourned her death, but it doesn't receive a great deal of attention within Scripture. Like Miriam, most of us will not make headlines when our time comes to leave the walks of men. We don't expect the country to have a mass slowdown like it would if, say, for example, a president dies. That makes the headlines, and you see the procession televised and all such things as that. Not likely to happen when you and I take our last breath. But that really doesn't matter. The important thing is not what the newspapers say about us or what somebody else says about us, but what God says about us and to us. Will he say to us, "Well done, enter into the joy of your Lord"? Or will he say, "Depart from me into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels"? It will be one of those two. And so, what shall it be with you? If tonight you're subject to the Lord's invitation, remember Miriam, the good things she did. Remember the mistake that she made, and remember the trouble that it caused. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation tonight to make your life right with him, come as we stand and sing to encourage you.